Welcome to the Slow Style Home Podcast. I am so happy you're here. If you want to create a beautiful home that isn't cookie cutter or a trendy copy of someone else's, you're in the right place. And if you don't want to hurt your wallet or the planet to get one of those dream homes. And you can get started with my brand new quiz called Fix My Room. It's actually more of an assessment tool, but the word quiz, I think, sounds better because it's really easy to do. Just answer 20 multiple choice questions and you'll be pinpointing why your room isn't working, why it feels off, and why maybe your previous efforts haven't really panned out. Or maybe you're fairly happy with your room, but you want to make sure that your design choices are going in the right direction. Visit our website at slowstylehome.com and click on the quiz button right at the top. I'll tell you a little bit more about it later in the show. Now, let's dig into this week's episode.
Hello, and welcome to the Style Matters podcast, brought to you by Little Yellow Couch. I'm Zandra, your host, and I am so glad you're here, but you have caught us during a break. We will be sharing all new episodes starting May 4th, but in the meantime, stick around because today you'll hear a re-released episode with one of my all-time favorite guests. Now, this one took place several years ago when my good friend Karen Grant was still co-hosting with me, so you'll hear her voice along with that of our guest, Lisa Borgnes-Giramonti. Actually, Lisa isn't just one of my favorite guests on the show. She is also one of my all-time favorite authors when it comes to design books. Hers is called Novel Interiors, Living in Enchanted Rooms Inspired by Literature. Now, maybe you're wondering what other design books I would highly recommend. And if you would like to know, be sure to sign up for the Little Yellow Couch newsletter, because I just sent out my first three recommendations, of which Novel Interiors was definitely at the top of that list. But I'm going to be sending out my second set of book recommendations soon, so sign up. And when you do, you will also automatically receive my free worksheet on developing your own style manifesto. And I have to say that this period of self-quarantine, when we're all doing our part to stay at home to curb the spread of the coronavirus, it's actually a great time to fill out the Style Manifesto worksheet because it does require a bit of self-reflection, and we don't always have time for that kind of thing during our normally busy, hectic lives. Plus, signing up for the newsletter means you won't miss any of the exclusive content that I'm putting together specifically to help keep our spirits up while we're stuck at home and while the podcast is on break. So I am talking about things like the book reviews, which I just mentioned, but also I'm going to be doing an organizational challenge, offering DIY ideas, how to work from home during the quarantine, and also a live Q&A with me about any of your design dilemmas that I might be able to help you with. So to join the Little Yellow Couch community, just go to littleyellowcouch.com and click on the yellow button that says Your Style Manifesto. It's right at the top of the homepage. All right, let's get started with Lisa Borgnes-Giramonti. I just have to say, I don't want to be a weird stalker or anything, but I mean, I cannot tell you, and Karen feels the exact same way, how much we love your book.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh, it speaks to us so many levels, and it makes me want to go do something. It's incredibly inspiring.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much, because I mean, that's, you know, it's written for everybody that loves literature or loves design, and you know, especially for people who, you know, have books that they read and wonder how they can get some of that feeling and that ethos and the coziness of these rooms into their homes, or even people that are attracted to certain design styles and want to go deeper. And you know, like someone that's attracted to, you know, like rustic modern or something, and then realizes that there's a whole world of literature out there that really kind of like typifies that style. You know, Willa Cather and D.H. Lawrence and, you know, Sarah Orne Jewett and everybody like that. So I'm so glad. That makes me very happy. Thank you.
Well, that leads us right into our first question, which is, you know, you said that these authors inspire so many of us to recreate the settings that they've created, but I actually don't think many people have put those two things together. That's what's so brilliant about your book is, how did you come up with the idea of connecting literature to decor and creating a home?
Well, I love that question because I feel like I have always, since I was a kid, I always lived in books. By the time I was like 10, I'd lived in 5 countries. I had 4 younger brothers and sisters, and I was like the bookworm in the family. And, you know, we just kept moving around. And the one thing that never changed was, you know, I had this, you know, shelf of my favorite books, and I would dip into them and I would just, you know, I would disappear. And I remember vividly, you know, reading Pippi Longstocking when I was like 6 or 7 and, you know, just being entranced by the way she lived in this, you know, bohemian house all by herself. And, you know, she climbed on the furniture and she would, you know, play games where, you know, they didn't touch the floor and everything was different colors. And, you know, that was kind of just, it just felt, you know, I lived in this very like mid-century modern house with a lot of like white and mirrors and stuff. And to me, that was just heaven, you know. And then reading, you know, The Secret Garden too, or, you know, Secret Garden, I remember, you know, just the garden itself, but growing up in the Midwest after we moved there, you know, like you're talking about Boston, I mean, these hot, humid summers, and I would just think of like the house in The Secret Garden with those cold, you know, cold stone floors, you know, and it's just, you know, I would transport myself back there, but, and then, as I got older, I've always remembered the rooms. I mean, more than the plot points in the novel. When I think of my favorite novels, like Jane Austen or Charles Dickens or F. Scott Fitzgerald, it's not so much the plot points, but what happens between them that draws me in, those moments, those special little moments. And, you know, life is, you know, meaning, and meaning is the stories that we tell ourselves. That's how we make meaning. And literature is stories. So, you know, all these moments I wanted to recreate myself, and I carry them around with me. So to go back to like how this kind of happened, about 4 years ago, I was asked to give a lecture in Cincinnati at a library. And they wanted me to talk about the houses I had lived in and how the books that I had read influenced me. And, yeah, I went back and thought about all the different places I've lived, like Williamsburg in the 90s and London in 96 and all the different, you know, apartments and everything. And I realized, you know, one thing, that my style kept changing. First, it started off very kind of Tama Janowitz in the 80s. Like, you know, I had like the zebra striped futon and like the trestle table. And,
yep.
You know, I was reading Slaves of New York and I, you know, that was totally who I was.
Yeah.
You know, and then I moved to Williamsburg in like this little carriage house and with 2 English roommates. And it was this crumbling kind of falling apart house where we kind of, you know, it's very much I Capture the Castle by Dodie Smith, you know, which is a book where these sisters, you know, live in this old crumbling down castle and they kind of just make whatever they can. They're so inventive. And so, you know, my roommate would plant moss on the fireplace mantle and plant and put flowers in it. And we had, you know, we had all these horrible sofas, but we would just drape them in velvet throws and like light candles and throw a party, you know? And my bedroom, I remember it had like a window that faced this Polish like sausage factory. And I was like, shit, you know, what can I do to this bedroom to make it cool? And so I turned it into like this sheltering sky room, and I got like a mosquito net, and, you know, I painted the walls in this deep terracotta, and I painted the ceiling in this like navy blue with like kind of pale blue swirls that was kind of like conjuring up, a stormy sky. And I had gone to like the Epcot Center or something back then and bought like a Moroccan tambourine and a couple pillows. And that was it, And I was like, every time I went to my bedroom, I was like in Paul Bowles land, And, so all the houses that I've lived in have kind of always been a reflection. So when I got the invitation to speak at this lecture, which I did, and kind of talked about a lot of what I've just been talking about now, I started to think, well, I can't be the only one. And certainly these aren't the books that changed me. I mean, there's so many more. And so, every time I thought of a novel, D.H. Lawrence and, the interior design of his novels, or Willa Cather. And then you look at, which is very Zen and kind of like, man-made over machine-made and, natural materials and simplicity, or you look at F. Scott Fitzgerald or Michael Arlen, and I mean, they have a totally different style of living, obviously, because the characters are different, and we are what surrounds us. I mean, that's why these authors describe the settings, is because they fit the characters. I mean, in F. Scott Fitzgerald, everything is about, like, kind of glamour and confidence and optimism, and it's the days of like jet set, early days of the jet set, and so all these things around the main characters reflect that. I mean, there's mirrors, there's clean lines, there's lots of white or lots of black, and then even in you can go on and on and on. But I realized that when it came to design books, I had all these design books in my house, and which I loved. And a lot of them had to do with Paris style or California style or Hollywood style. So it was based on they drew their inspiration from a geographical place. Or I'd have, monographs on certain designers. So that was their particular vision. Or there were time periods, like 1950, mid-century style. But no one had ever kind of done the world of all these authors, which in a way encompasses everything, but at the same time is so personal. And once I kind of decided on that, I read about 100 novels. Most of them I had read before, but, really reading them with an eye for, like, picking up every single detail. And, got a book proposal together and got an agent, and then was lucky enough to get a couple offers. And I went with, Random House, and it happened.
Well, it sounds like it's so natural that you've been making these connections between the settings found in books and your own home life since you were little.
Yeah.
And I just have to say, I find it still so brilliant because I cherish the books that I own, and mm-hmm. I love looking at them. I love looking at them in my bookcases, and I love looking at the titles, and it reminds me of a particular time in my life that I was reading it and what it meant to me based on what I was going through at that time. But I still don't think I have made the leap between that and using it as a very practical source of inspiration for how I might want to decorate. And that's what your book does so brilliantly, that I just, Karen and I, we have read a ton of design books, and we've never seen one like this before.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you. I mean, when you read these books, though, like you think of Elizabeth Gaskell, who to me was kind of like the Martha Stewart of her day. And, her novel Cranford is so great because, I mean, she just populates this novel. Every couple pages, there's like some kind of Martha Stewart tip, like, some character right. is putting vanilla beans in, the underwear drawer. And you're like, oh, like, I'll do that, or lavender. Or, she's talking about like how the books are kind of arranged in a circle around a table, and, there's branches from outside, or like things are worn. And I mean, she gives you all these kind of specific things. Oh, even, like an orange studded with cloves, and you're like, oh yeah, that's, I got to do that, for the holiday season, because it's great. And so all, and then even F. Scott Fitzgerald is another great example, because you can really, Tender is the Night is one of my favorite novels in terms of style, because at one point he describes this outdoor dinner party in the south of France that Nicole and Dick Diver give.
Oh, yes.
And I'm telling you, it's like that, those 3 pages, you just need to like Xerox them and like like put them up when you have a party, because he gets it. He gets it so well. Like he's, you know, he talks about how the host greets the guests in the beginning. You know, he talks about there's a special cocktail, and if you Google, you can find out the cocktail is called the Juice of Three Flowers. You can find the recipe online. You know, and then he talks about, you know, how there are lanterns in the trees and candles on all the tables, and how they even, there's the garden is even planted so that it's kind of like a moonlight garden, so that there's all these kind of plants that are gray and white and that kind of spring to life when the sun goes down, like they release their scent. And so there's this table under the pines hung with lanterns, and these people are gathered around the table. And he talks about how, you know, they are alone in their own dark universe. And you're like, oh my God, like that's what you want in a dinner party, is you want everyone to just like be so bonded and connect. And how do you create that? How do you create like that feeling? You know,
and here we've got William Faulkner telling us how to do it, or Fitzgerald. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Fitzgerald telling us how to do it. Who would have thought that you'd get that from Fitzgerald? But it's right there, and you found it. You were open to finding it, which is exciting.
Oh, thank you.
Well, and I love hearing about your long lived passion behind books. But I'm curious how long it took you to write this book, sort of, you know, if you're reading 100 novels over again and curating, you know, and maybe also how you found the places to photograph that are in the book.
Gosh.
Because I mean, each one of them and then pairing them with these quotes. And I mean, it's one of those design books where you absolutely read every word too.
Yep.
Oh, you guys, thank you. Well, I'll tell you, the book got written because I was completely naive. And I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I mean, I did kind of, but I was so naive, honestly, that when I signed a deal, I thought that I was going to get like a production person and kind of assistant. And I remember they said to me, so, you know, how long do you think it'll take you to write the book? And I was like, well, maybe, you know, I mean, a year and a half. And they're like, well, you know, we could give you about 9 months. I'm like, okay. And they said, so just call us then.
Oh, wow.
Like, oh my God, wait a second. Wait. But fine. You know, so I read, you know, I just had huge spreadsheets of like all the novels, all the quotes from the novels. And I started to categorize styles. So, you know, immediately I knew that like Elizabeth Gaskell was going to go in the chapter with Jane Austen and Charles Dickens, and, you know, Oscar Wilde and Marcel Proust were going to be way on the other end because their rooms were, you know, completely different. And then at the same time, I started to really kind of just live with all these, elements, all the elements in each chapter. You know, I had like 10 or 12 elements of style. Like in the first chapter, Charles Dickens one, I was looking for tattered rugs. I was looking for, you know, a house that had lived, loved, and, you know, had lots of laugh lines. You know, I was looking for worn furniture. I was looking for cracked teacups, or, you know, things that like where it's not about the provenance of an item, but about the patina and the soul of an item. So, you know, luckily, I live in Los Angeles, so there are many people I know, many friends who have kind of designed their house to be their own fantasy. So I knew, you know, I had a couple houses that I knew would fit perfectly with, you know, the first chapter. And I knew of houses up in the Hollywood Hills that were very, very D.H. Lawrence and very kind of rustic modern. And then I hired a photographer and we put the shoot together we shot for about 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks in New York, New Jersey, and Los Angeles.
You shot all of those houses in 3 weeks?
Well, I shot all those houses in 3 weeks. Yes, it was a tight, you know, it was a tight schedule. It's like every day is a different house.
Wow.
But it took longer to get them all together, and then of course I had to like pre-scout and make sure that you know, that if I'd seen a picture online and on a website or something, that it still kind of did look like that. But it was so much fun. It was just, you know, it was just a dream come true, though. I mean, it was the hardest thing I've ever done and also the most, you know, rewarding thing I've ever done.
Oh, I bet. Absolutely. Well, I mean, it just, it completely shows through. And Sandra called me the other day and she's like, we need to go antiquing. We need more teacups. You know, and I was like, why? And she's like, I'm on the page where there's teacups and we need more teacups.
Oh. So. That's so funny. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's fun. It makes things fun. It makes shopping fun. And I think, you know, it also gives you a story to attach to something so that, you know, for people who are young and just starting out in their own apartments, and, you know, a lot of times meaning is inherited through items, like you get something that belongs to your grandmother and there's a story attached to it, and that's great, but a lot of people don't have that. So, you know, how do you create a home that's really meaningful when you're just starting out? And I think, you know, you can go to the chapter in my book and, you know, find, you say, well, if I love, you know, bohemian stuff, you know, I love that kind of whole layered look with like lots of colorful textiles. Then, you know, you go and you look at, read that chapter and you're like, okay, you know, maybe I'm going to get a Suzani, like maybe I'll hang it up behind my bed because I don't have a headboard, you know, or maybe I'll just, you know, I don't have enough money for like a really big, nice rug, but I can go to a flea market and buy like 3 or 4 or 5 and kind of just layer them on top of each other and maybe put a big floor pillow on, you know, a couple floor pillows. And that could be like my hangout area. So, and that's very Isaac Dinesen. So, you know, or, you know, there's, you buy like a brown Betty teapot, which is like the teapot. It's a brown teapot. It's made in Stoke-on-Trent and they're very inexpensive. And most 19th century novels are always, you know, they're always drinking tea out of this brown Betty teapot. So, you know, you get that and you're like, okay, I'm connected.
I'm connected. Yes. That's what's so awesome about it, is that you are connecting to something that's meaningful to you because the book was meaningful to you and the characters and the story and the setting, and then it becomes very personal. So something that you might not have any connection to whatsoever, suddenly you do.
Yes. Yeah, and I think, you know, also as your style keeps changing, you know, because I've probably rotated through many of the chapters in my book just in my terms of my own design style. Or you find one that grounds you, like, you know, maybe probably for me it's the first chapter where things are worn and, you know, have soul, but I layer it, you know, so then I add like bohemian layers on top because I travel a lot and I like to buy things, you know, that remind me of the places I've been. And then, you know, every now and then there's like a piece of drama in there. So I remember, you know, which is very much like, you know, Proust and Oscar Wilde would always, you know, they created these incredible theatrical backdrops for their heroes or their protagonists. And it was all about, you know, making the guest or whoever was in the room feel like they were the only person on earth. You know, so that's nice to do in a room too. Like you could create some dining room where when people sit down and you dim the lights, it's like that's, it's happening, like they're on stage. And it's fun. People live, people like rise to the occasion when they feel like they're in a space that inspires them.
Right. And you talk about that in your book about having that the setting that you create can evoke the confidence in your guests to
yes.
rise to the occasion of, you know, their best selves or their most entertaining selves. And people just have a lot of fun when they're feeling good about themselves.
They do. And, you know, I also love, and I know it's done a lot now too, but, you know, I love like having, mixing up all the dining chairs because again, it's like when you're having a dinner party, like you don't invite 8 people with the same personality. So, you know, I think your chair should be afforded the same privilege. And,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
when people sit down,
that.
Like some people are on a bench, some people are in an armchair. It's like, it's all good. It's like, they just understand that everything goes. Everything goes. You know, this is not going to be like a formal dinner where we have to like restrict ourselves to certain like politically correct topics or whatever. Like we're just going to have glasses of wine. We're going to eat and have a great time.
Yeah.
We'll be back after a quick break. I just want to jump in here for a minute and remind you about the new free quiz that you can take at slowstylehome.com. It's called the Fix My Room quiz, and I've created it because a lot of times when we're ready to change up a room in our homes, we get stuck not knowing where to start or what to do first. I mean, do you paint the walls? Do you come up with a different floor plan? Do you declutter first and then buy all new stuff? it's daunting. So the quiz is designed as a way for you to assess what's not working so that you're pointed in the right direction in terms of what to focus on. Everything else can kind of fall away. After years of helping others look around their rooms and identify the possibilities for big, impactful changes, I figured out how you can do this assessment yourself. The 20 multiple choice questions will ask you about how your room is functioning and how your style is developing. Then you'll receive a detailed summary from me about what you should tackle first. No more guessing and no more throwing money away or time. Again, go to slowstylehome.com and click on the quiz button right at the top. All right, let's jump back into today's episode.
Oh, that sounds, can I be invited? Can Karen and I come? well, we have so much more to ask you, but we do want to be conscious of the time, but we're going to fit a couple more questions in.
Sure.
Karen is an embroidery artist herself, so I know she is really interested in talking to you about your work.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Karen.
Right. Yeah. So we love your work, and people can check it out on your website. But you have both a series of pieces that are needlepoint samplers that sort of look like traditional pieces, but they're more of a commentary on modern day life. And so we'd love to hear about those. And then also you have quite a few pieces that are interiors that you have painstakingly, because I embroider almost daily.
Wow.
It keeps me sane. It's my
I get to be the recipient of much of what she makes, which is, I'm lucky.
It's my drug of choice. So, but we'd love to hear sort of what embroidery means to you, what taking the time to do something with your hands of that type of detail, but also having something to say behind it.
Yeah, I've been embroidering, you know, since I was a little girl too. My grandmother embroidered, my mom embroidered. So, you know, I grew up in seeing them sew. You know, my mom used to just sew millions of like Christmas stockings. You know, everyone would get like big Christmas applique stockings with like sequins all over them. And
that's great.
So I wanted to do things, though, that weren't necessarily part of a kit. I always wanted to do my life. It's like, if I'm going to sew something, I want it to be really personal. So I started off, like, in my 20s, kind of embroidering the rooms I lived in. And I have three or four pieces that are on my website where you can actually, you know, those were so labor intensive, and they took about 3 to 4 months each. And, I mean, they're not enormous. They're like maybe 8 by 10. And there's thousands and thousands of stitches in there. And, you know, I love embroidering because it's a connection to the past. You know, it's kind of this traditional woman's work, but it really shouldn't be. I mean, why is it, you know, it's relegated to a craft, but I think it's kind of, I think it's more of an art, actually. And but then I realized, you know, if I just stick to doing these small pieces, you know, I'm going to have like 10 pieces by the time I die, because
they take forever. Yeah.
And so I was also interested, you know, as a writer, you know, I was kind of also interested in poetry. And I just started, you know, writing these little poems, because I also loved samplers. You know, those 17th, 18th century samplers where girls would use them, you know, as sewing instruction. And there'd always be some kind of moralizing sentiment about, you know, living well or dying young, or, you know, I mean, they weren't very happy, these samplers. And I thought, you know, why I wanted to do samplers that reflected my life, my time, my society. And I wanted to make them big. I just felt like, you know, I just want to go big. And I've always had this like infatuation with burlap. I just think it's so cool. And I thought, you know what? I mean, I could make these big samplers on burlap you know, make the stitches so it would be the same amount of stitches. It's the exact same amount of stitches.
Just bigger.
You know, but they'd be big. And so I started, I did a couple, and somehow, I think I might have put one on my website or something, and somehow this gallery in Beverly Hills found out, and they called me and came over, and they said, you know, we'd really love to put a couple of these in a group show. And they called me back a couple of days later, and they said, you know, we'd really love you to have your own show. I mean, could you do 10?
And, 10.
Yeah, 10. I had two. And I was like, you know, absolutely, because that's what you do, right? You just say yes, right? I mean,
right.
I spent a
of
lot
course,
of my life being frightened and saying no. And
oh.
so now I'm at, you know, I'm just like, I just say yes. So, like, absolutely. And I spent the next 9 months, like, on my hands and knees, like, doing these big samplers. I had a show. And it was... You know, I loved it. I mean, I love living in LA. I loved living in New York. I love kind of taking this comical view of, like, satirical view of society, you know, in the same way that 18th century cartoonists like Thomas Rowlandson or James Gilray, they kind of lampooned, you know, fashionable society back then. And
right.
You know, come
You're
on, life
it.
Is funny. I mean, Hollywood is funny. It's a funny place. I mean, a lot of, you know, and it's not just Hollywood. Like, life in the 21st century is pretty funny at times. And so, you know, I thought about all these, you know, I'd been to see the Bayeux Tapestry in France, which is that super long tapestry. It's like 80 feet long. It was done in, like, I don't know, like the 1500s, and it's all about a battle. It's about William I and conquering and stuff like that. And it's so great because the characters kind of look like they look like cartoons. I mean, they have like bowl cuts, and you can see like what they're wearing, and you kind of walk down this tapestry, and you can see this actual all this action kind of unfolding. But what was amazing is when you see it, you're just like, oh my God, it's like a cartoon, and it just feels so approachable and so relevant, and I get it. You know, it's not like some really formal Aubusson tapestry where it's all religious and stuff. And so after that, I kind of I started embroidering. Right now I'm working on a show of fearless women, women who women who took risks and did not care one whit about what anyone else thought of them. So I've done Edith Sitwell, and I've done Little Edie Beale, you know, from Grey Gardens, and I've done Diana Vreeland, and I'm going to get started on Patti Smith, and, you know, Isabella Blow, and all these people, and, you know, so I guess I sew to inspire myself. You know, this show is definitely about not being afraid, because I spent a lot of my life, I think, saying no to things that I probably should have said yes to, and so this is kind of my... I know my way of kind of never going back to that again.
Oh yeah. That's a great commitment.
But I, you know, I love the samplers. I want to keep doing samplers. And to me, it's sewing is, it's just the medium I use to talk about, you know, how I feel about society today. So
it's great. Just for our listeners' sake, we're going to read one of them. Okay. So this is a sampler. Fill me, plump me, smooth me out, inject me with a girlish pout. Keep me spotless and unmarred, just put it on my credit card. And it's just great that it is in this traditional style, because if you looked at it from far away, although these are big, so maybe this wouldn't be true, but if you were to look at it from far away, you would not know that it, you would assume it was a traditional sampler.
Exactly.
So
that's exactly what I wanted. I'm so happy you said that, because that's why, you know, I kind of did it in that traditional style, because I almost wanted people to like be like, oh yeah, it's just one of those, you know, talking about like tuberculosis and, you know, early death. And then you look at it and you're like, oh my God, like, no, it's not. So.
Well, I think to your point too, they were of their time, so
yes,
they didn't feel old fashioned to them.
Yeah. That's what concerned them. I mean, they wrote about their lives. So, you know, it made sense to write about, you know, what's happening today.
Well, it's great. We'd love it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we could go on and on with our love fest for you.
Lisa, we appreciate your time so much. And we love everything we've talked about. We're so, I mean, just so genuinely inspired by this book. And I want to, like, right here, just say to all of our listeners that go get this book. On any level, you're going to get something out of it. I just think that it's inspiring.
There are practical ideas. Lisa gives you lists of objects that you might want to look for when you're antiquing, if you know what kinds of books and therefore what kinds of style you're interested in, which I think is so helpful. There are so many people that they get so overwhelmed with big antique malls or antique fairs, and they end up feeling sort of paralyzed and not buying anything. And I think that this gives you a fun little shopping list almost, or like a treasure hunt, you know, something that you're going to that you're going to, it's a great way to spend a day to just go have your little treasure hunt list and go try to seek these objects out. So that's a practical example of something that you might find in the book. But then, of course, there are also all of the inspirational photos and all of the quotes that you put in from all of the authors. And, you know, some of the books that you mentioned, I haven't read in 25 years.
Right,
and,
right.
Oh,
yeah, you want to pull them out again after this, too.
Yep.
You feel a little bit more educated after you read the book, too. Which is always a nice feeling.
Well, you know, hopefully it'll inspire people to, you know, just like you said, get out your books and read those again, because there's just so much. And, I mean, it's fun to – I feel like I carry all these books around me in my head. You know, I don't need – like, you know, I feel like I don't need – material possessions as much anymore, because I have everything in my head. It's like the last scene in that movie Fahrenheit 451 by Francois Truffaut, when you see all these people and, you know, by a lake, and they say, "Hi, I'm David Copperfield," and they have memorized all the books, because, you know, books aren't allowed anymore in that society. And so I feel like when you have that, I mean, you know, if my library were to burn down or whatever, I'd still have so much in my head that I feel blessed, and all these precious moments that I can still think about. So I can take that with you. Can take that with you. I mean, and it's about connecting. You know, I mean, literature is about connecting. I mean, these authors wanted to connect, and they put their specific ethos and point of view and styles and everything in all their books. And you'll find one that just is magical to you. I mean, you will. There are all these styles, and one of them will connect with you. So if I could get people to read, you know, go back and look at these books again with like a different point of view, you know, or a more kind of inspiring way to get into the book, then, you know, I would feel thrilled.
Absolutely. And almost permission to linger on some of those pages, because I think sometimes we think we're the only one that has read through a chapter again and again to sort of
and again, you know, the last thing is, like, I feel like the meaning in these in novels is not the plot points, but what happens between the plot points. And so it's those quiet moments, and it's the same in life. You know, I mean, the times you're going to remember, like when you're on your deathbed, are those quiet moments, like when you were looking down at your child, or when you were like looking at the ocean and the wind was blowing and the sun was perfect. I mean, it's not like dialogue. You're not going to remember dialogue. You're going to remember the moments of stillness that were so beautiful. And in all of these novels, there are moments of stillness to be found and moments of beauty. And, you know, if I can bring those out of the past and show you how relevant they are to life today, and how inspiring they are, and how they can add beauty and meaning to your life, then
you've done your job. Yeah. And you really have. Lisa, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome. It was such a pleasure, you guys.
Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to sign up for the Little Yellow Couch newsletter for your free Style Manifesto worksheet, as well as access to exclusive content. Just go to littleyellowcouch.com. Also, I hope you are taking care of yourself, staying sane, and finding at least glimpses of a silver lining during these very uncertain times. Be sure to stay in touch. I will be back in your earbuds next week. Bye for now. Thanks so much for listening. I know your time is valuable, and I really do appreciate you spending it with me. And please, please, please take a minute to leave a review for Slow Style Home wherever you get your podcasts. It honestly does help keep this show on the air, and your feedback is highly valuable to me. Have a great day, and I'll be back in your earbuds soon. Bye for now.